I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and of course, I'm thrilled to be here with you. You know, there are lots and lots of you out there who are reaching out to me. I think we have lots of new followers because of my recent honor to guest host for the great Malcolm Out Loud on his program, Viewpoint, this Sunday. So you can catch that program on podcast. I will also be hosting this coming Sunday at 10 a.m., repeated at 6 p.m., and the week after that. So join me on Viewpoint as well as Chasing Justice each and every weekday at 3 p.m. And it's great to really is great to have everybody here as we get ready to move on to another year. There's so many things to look forward to, but it's also a great time of year to look back. You know, what have we seen? What have been the really good things? What have been some of the bad things? And what can we learn? Life is nothing if we don't learn from the events that take place, all right, whether it's good or bad. So when I look and I say, how did our economy do this year? Well, I think the answer is crystal clear to everyone. The economy is booming. Now, I can see that in my own business world. I can see that in the lives of my friends and family who are doing much better than they ever did before. They're getting raises, promotions. There's opportunity in their places of work. I'm seeing people I know that have been out of work for a long time, finally going back to work. And not just to a $8 an hour hamburger flipping job, because that's they can take anything because they need the money, but real jobs where there's a real opportunity to provide for their families. And I think that's a great thing for 2019. 2020, I think, can be even better. And I think we're hearing lots and lots of predictions that the economy will be great. My concern is that there's lots of other elements that go into an economy, not just what we do here in America, but the things that are out in the world can affect the American economy. One of the things we're seeing, which is a new wrinkle, is this developing relationship between Iran, Russia, and China. Now, the Iranians and the Russians have had a relationship for a long time, but now including the Chinese in that is what I have started to call the new Axis powers. Now, some people might say that that's a little harsh to call them the Axis powers, you know, as opposed to the Axis powers that caused the horrors of World War II. Well, just because they haven't done it yet doesn't mean they're not preparing to do something like that. When we look at them, three countries, do we see them as benevolent, as countries where individual human rights and freedoms are celebrated? Or are they expansionist? Are they always looking to take from other places? You know, one of the things I'm looking back on the year is the attacks, the never-ending attacks on America from within our own country. You know, the attacks on that we're a racist country, we're a homophobic country, we're a place that doesn't have tolerance, we're a place that pollutes. You know, these voices that used to be, I don't know, in the background, are now mainstream. Now, I'd be the first one to tell you, have we had a problem with racism? Of course we have. Are we dealing with it? Come on, let's be honest. We are. You know, we are dealing with it. People are seeing people for who they are now. You know, the whole content of the character thing? I think it's better than it's ever been. Can it be better? Of course it can. But I think that goes all the way around. I think everyone has to agree we need to move forward, and I think we can have that happen. So we saw a little change in some of those things. You know, we've talked about the kneelers, you know, in the football league, in the NFL, you know, the guys that are kneeling because they have a grievance with America, and that's their way of showing their grievance. But then we've seen less of it in this past 2019, so much so that I decided to go back and watch football. And again, I'll explain that in that. You know, I didn't want to watch them kneel, so I wasn't going to let these guys denigrate our country that's for all of us, by kneeling. And then after a couple years of not watching, I saw that it lessened. And then I saw a couple of guys on the NFL that were going out of their way to try and understand the grievance and trying to do the right thing. But I said, wait a minute, I'm also boycotting those guys that are doing the right thing. So you know what? Maybe it's time to go back and give it a chance. And I did. And I think the networks kind of wised up, probably because of financial reasons. You know, instead of showing the national anthem with everyone kneeling and focusing on all of the players, they kind of do the national anthem before the TV cameras come on, so as not to offend their audience, which is really smart business. But it also allows a person like me to come back and not have to be offended by seeing them do that. But I think it's also slowed down as well. I think there's been a lot of call to address grievances. You know, just because it's not my life, it's not my experience, doesn't mean people don't have a legitimate grievance. And as a country, we should listen to the grievance. And if we can fix it, we should fix it. So the economy's doing better. I think there's been a change of heart in a lot of areas when it comes to President Trump. You know, this guy was a beloved figure in American culture prior to him running for president. Now, if he had run as a liberal Democrat, if he was pro-abortion, if he was, you know, pro-open borders, take any of those topics that are important to our friends on the left. If Trump had embraced those as his running, they would love him more than anything in the world. And I've heard some of my liberal friends tell me that. You know, if he had taken the right position on these things, I'd support him. Well, the right position on some of the things he's done is like, you know, taxation, lower the taxes, cut the regulation. Many of my friends on the left are in favor of high taxes, high regulation, you know, government control. We would not have the economy we have. They don't necessarily see that. What they see is, no, what we would have done is we would have taken, you know, the one percenters' money and spread that out over everyone, and then everyone would be doing great right now. And unfortunately, our school systems have failed many of our children, that they grow up believing this, especially the young people. You know, I think like traditionally young people have always been, you know, they see why not as an important thing. Why can't we? You know, why should 1% of the people have all this money and everyone else have nothing? If we just take that money and spread it out, then wouldn't everybody be better? Then everybody have money to go buy things. The economy would be great. And we all know life experience teaches that's not how it works. You can't take one person's stuff, give it to other people, and think things are going to get better. That just does not happen. Now, Bernie Sanders, who's a candidate for president, he believes that also. He sees that as a viable way of doing things. And like I have said here on Chasing Justice so many times, I think the politicians on the left often use good intentions of people who are on the left against them. They use this idea that fairness, wouldn't it be great to make it fair? You know, fairness is, as a concept, if people will not be fair themselves, then wouldn't it be great for someone to step in and make it fair? I mean, isn't that really what our courts are there to do to some extent? If you are aggrieved, somebody crashes into your car and you say, hey, you ran that red light and crashed my car. You got to pay for my medical. You got to pay for my car. And, you know, this, that, and they say, no, we're not doing that. Well, that's not fair. So what do? We go to the court and we plead our case to the court. And the court says, here's the right thing. Justice and fairness means you're going to pay for the car. You're going to pay for the health care, whatever. You caused the accident. But I think a lot of the things that the people on the left do is that they use those good intentions. They use those good intentions to twist people, to get what they are looking for in the long run, which really is control over the economy, control over people, control over every aspect of your life. They want to tell you how to live. Now, I wouldn't think that if I didn't actually see it in my lifetime. If this was not true, I think I would have to say, well, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that. But we have all seen it. We have seen it everywhere in the world where socialism takes over. It starts out with great, everything's going to be great and equal and share and everybody's going to have everything. And it turns out people starving, people running around looking for toilet paper, people eating their cats and dogs. And that's not a joke. That's not even said as a wisecrack. In Venezuela, people are eating the animals that they can find because there's no food. I mean, how is that better? But hey, the guy in charge got all the power. The government got all the power. And that was really their goal. Right, so our economy is better. We're seeing some strange stuff in our politics. The impeachment, you know, where is that going? You know, we've talked about that a lot here on Chasing Justice, and I know lots and lots of pundits and talkers out there have been talking about the impeachment. As we move through the holiday times, we still didn't see the articles of impeachment go from the Congress, where they were voted on and approved, to go to the Senate. And that's the process. That's where they're supposed to go. You know, it's a two-part process. The Congress makes their case, they put on their evidence, and then everybody in the Congress is supposed to vote based on the evidence that they got. What I find really interesting, excuse me, is that it was a one-sided attack in the Congress. The left-wing side of the attack, Schiff and Pelosi, only put on their witnesses that were one-sided, that were biased. The one witness that they did have on, one college professor who said he was liberal, but he found the process to be completely inappropriate. We never heard another word from him, Jonathan Turley. They didn't give him any credit. They simply had him on there as the token one who was against what they were doing. But other than that, the Republicans couldn't ask questions. They couldn't bring in witnesses. Matter of fact, Schiff, as we all have said 100 times here, he guided the witnesses not to answer their questions. And now that the process is moving over to the Senate, Nancy Pelosi wants to dictate how it's going to go over there also. She wants to know exactly the process, who's going to be in charge of it. They want more witnesses. They want to control that. And that's not appropriate. That's not how the system works. And this is where, as I've called this, an illegitimate impeachment many, many times, is because of the way they're running it. Not because of the fact that they don't have a right to do it. Of course they do. It's illegitimate based on what they're doing, and that's really part of the problem. All right, so we have that. We've seen, on the negative side, a rise in anti-Semitism in this past year, a real rise in anti-Semitism. This is a poison for the entire world, anti-Semitism, because it's indicative of intolerance and growing evil in the background. We've had this before. The world, the history of the world, is not missing any time periods where there's not been anti-Semitism. We see anti-Semitism going back many, 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 many thousands of years in human interaction. And every time it rises its ugly head, it is a horrific part of our human experience. You know, in World War II, we saw probably the culmination of some of the worst anti-Semitism you could ever see in the slaughter of millions of people, innocent people going about their lives, women, children, men, families destroyed in the name of hatred and anti-Semitism. And we fought a war, and part of that war, we saw these atrocities. And the world said, never again. This is where the birth of Israel came from, so that the Jewish people would have a home place that could be theirs, where they could not be removed or destroyed. This was a good thing. It was their traditional lands. They've tried for 40 years now, more than 40 years, to make peace with their neighbors. That is not happening, not because the Israelis are not trying, no matter what the media will tell you. They're not occupying places, and I'll clarify that. Are some places the Israelis have gone into or they occupied after a war? Yes, that's called legality. If you attack me and I fight back and take your land, guess what? You shouldn't have started the fight, and I get to keep that land. That's not occupying. That's winning land in a war that someone else started. So they have a strong homeland. They've been a great ally to America all these years, the Israeli government, the Israeli people. And as a country, we are called on to stand for justice and decency and what's right in the world. If we don't, who else is going to do? Who's going to stand up and be the America? Who would have saved the world in World War I? Who would have saved the world in World War II? Who fought, died, and sent our children to bleed and die for all these other conflicts that, whether you agree with them over time or not, the reality is when we were fighting against communism, the spread of communism, if we didn't do that, it could have taken over huge parts of the world, cut off trade, cut off relationships. What we see now as we look back, it wasn't done properly because our government didn't have the guts to do the right things. They backed out. They used it for political reasons, got us involved in wars where we didn't win, got a lot of people hurt and killed, and then backed off because they didn't have the political will to finish things. But that being said, who else would step into the breach? In all of modern history, since America has been a country, when there's been evil in the world, when there's been tyrannical people in the world rising up, it's America that leads the way, that fights back. That's why we are exceptional, you know? And if you saw nothing else in this past year, the battle between the Trump team, because I can't say all the Republicans, because we know there's a lot of never-Trumpers who are swamp creatures, but in the Trump people and the Americans who voted for Trump, who voted for him not because we think he's the greatest guy on the planet or we love his tweets or we love the vulgar things he says, because he is a person, he was a citizen who stepped up to continue American traditionalism, to keep America strong, to be a president that can lead us to our better angels. Now, is he flawed like any other human being? He is. Does he say things I don't like? Of course he does. Do I say things you don't like sometimes? I'm sure I do. But that doesn't mean he's not taking us to the right place. And he is. So we see this rise of anti-Semitism as a symptom of negativity in the world. And I think it built this way before World War I. I think we can certainly see examples of negativity and danger building before World War II. And now as we move forward into the new modern era, we're seeing it build again. And anti-Semitism being on the rise is a symptom of that. And we have to see these signs. The signs are there for us to see the bigger picture of where we could possibly be heading as a people. And I mean all people across the world. So we have to be very, very careful with that. The two church shootings or religious shootings that we've seen attacks recently on a Hanukkah party in Muncie, New York, up in the Ramapo, New York area. A Jewish family having a Hanukkah celebration, and a guy breaks in and stabs six people. And then we see in a church in Fort Worth, Texas, where a guy goes in and shoots and kills people who are praying. These are horrible individual attacks, but they are also symptomatic, just like the rise of anti-Semitism is, in the degrading of how we interact with each other, and it's leading to a powder keg. I have an article shortly up on AmericaOutloud.com where I talk about the future and how, well, I'm equating a lot of this. The analogy I use is it's like an earthquake. The pressure builds underneath our feet, and we're not always aware of it. We're not prepared for it. We know it can happen, but we also a lot take the kind of a feeling that it'll never happen. And then, of course, the pressure breaks, the ground shakes, the buildings come down, and there's terrible tragedy. Well, I see that coming this way also. I see that as part of what we're seeing here, and that's my analogy. We're seeing these signs. Are we doing anything about it? As the American people, we have an obligation to make things better. You know, do people have grievances? Yes, let's listen to their grievances. But how far do we go in listening to a grievance? Do we listen to unreasonable grievances? Do we listen to unreasonable demands? Do we allow violence, like the Antifa group? They have a grievance. They don't like capitalism. They don't like the American system. How far do we go to allow them to make their case? Do we allow them to destroy downtowns? Do we allow them to attack innocent people? Well, the answer, if you live in certain parts of this country where they believe that kind of a thing, you see the answer is absolutely yes. You can go attack people, stop traffic, injure people, destroy property, and there's no consequence. That, again, is another symptom of this problem that I see coming. So that's kind of where we're looking here. You know, the future can be very bright for us. We are going to have to step up. We're going to have to assume our place in history. And I used to think that it would be coming someday. And I'm telling you now, the way I see it, The moment is now. The future is now. It is our responsibility to figure out how to do this, because it's no longer something that's down the road somewhere. We've crossed that crossroad, and we are now at that place in history where we're called on to maintain freedom, liberty, democracy, decency, and justice. We have to do that together as a people. We'll be back in a minute with round two here on Chasing Justice.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. You know, it's we're getting close to the new year. We know the new year 2020 is going to unfold in front of us like a great big flower in the springtime, which is what we're all hoping for here on the Jersey Shore, because right now it's starting to get gray. It's interesting color gray we have here in the Northeast, though. It's like there's multiple shades of gray that we get for the next 6 months. It's really nice. You get light gray, dark gray. And it's peppered up there with some nice rain and usually some ice and some snow. Lots of fun. So what I'd like to talk about here is I brought some of the guys from the neighborhood in here. We have Bill, the man of faith, Dallas. Bill, how are you?
Joe, I am feeling great, and I really miss doing this.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and we're making plans to get the neighborhood guys back in lots of episodes this year because they are a fan favorite, and I can see why. Also with us, we have our lawyer of record, Joe Pangaro, my son, who is a fantastic attorney. You never want to go up against him, and if you're in trouble, he's the only guy you want. Joe, how are you?
Hey, Dad, thanks for that introduction. It's great to be on the show again.
That's great. I'm glad to have you here, Joe. Listen, when we talk about the year 2020, I don't want to say 2019 has been tumultuous, but we have seen some unprecedented things in the year of 2019. We have seen an economic boom that our country has not seen in over 50 years. We're seeing people who are going to work who hadn't been to work for the last several 8-9 years. We're seeing revenues to the government actually increase. When people are working, this is how it works. You know, more people go to work, they pay more taxes, revenue goes up, there's more money for everybody. But even better still, there's a pretty good feeling in the country right now. People are feeling good about their prospects, about what's going to happen. The outliers for problems, unfortunately, for the coming year, include what's going to happen with this impeachment. You know, the president's being impeached. Well, he actually hasn't been impeached yet. They voted on it, but they haven't transmitted anything. And when Mrs. Pelosi brings them over to the Senate, then they will figure out if they're actually going to have an impeachment or not. So, Bill, just to go ahead there, what do you see as a wrap up for 2019, and what would you think was important, and where are we going in 2020?
Well, I can do that in what, two words or less. I really think that Trump's economy, and I say Trump's economy because he's the one that is spearheading this thing. We have had the longest surge in the economy since he became president. And ever since he's become president, we've had one record-breaking moment after another.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah. You know me, I get excited when I talk about things that I really love. And I really love this president. And I foresee even bigger things once he gets elected. If the Democrats would just leave him alone, there's amazing things that this country can do if we're led by this president.
That's excellent. I don't think there's a chance we're not going to be led by this president. I don't think they're going to be able to remove him. Joe, where do you see 2019? What do you think about that year? And what do you think about going forward into 2020?
You know what? I think from my perspective, one of the biggest things that we saw was the appointment of really incredible federal judges by President Trump. You know, we got the second, nominee. Kavanaugh had a full term to get a sense of where he's going with his interpretation of the law. And more interesting than that even is Trump is now, as of the end of this year, appointed 50 appellate court judges. And that's, he did that in 3 years. By comparison, Obama appointed 55 in 8 years. So really we're seeing the, and that's because Mitch McConnell, the turtle, slowed down the appellate appointment process during Obama's second term. And it was kind of a gamble. He left a lot of seats open, and it, you know, Trump and McConnell together are paying that off. I think we have 2 seats currently open in the appeals court, no seats open in the Supreme Court, but you could see by the end of this year, one more Supreme Court justice and maybe five or six more appellate judges, which would mean Trump in one term has outpaced Obama over the course of his entire 8 years. And I really think it's been an incredible thing that we've been following in the legal community.
That's really awesome. And you're right. You know, federal judges make a big difference in the lives of everybody in the country. Having good quality judges that are doing the right thing. And what is the right thing? I guess if you're on the left, you would say doing the right thing is using the courts to create law, to reinterpret things, to find things in the law that don't exist otherwise. If you're a conservative, you want them to read the law and compare it to the Constitution as it goes. I liked recently, I don't know which one of the Supreme Court justices it was, but came out and explained what constitutional interpretation means to be a traditionalist. And I thought that was really, really great. As far as the economy goes, I think we're in for a continued boom, especially if we see a deal with the Chinese. If we can work that out somehow so that it's not this back and forth, I think we will have a tremendous boom, at least for the next 18 months, if not longer. But Bill, when we look at this, do you think that these other countries that I've been calling the new Axis powers, we see that there's recently been some military activities between China, Iran, and Russia over in the Gulf of Oman. I'm looking at them as the new Axis powers. What do you think that they see all this turmoil in our country with the Congress looking to get rid of the president? I mean, why do we deal with a guy that's going to get tossed out? What do you think?
Well, I think they realize if they really do their homework, they're going to realize that Trump is not going to get thrown out. He's got a strong backing in the results of the economy, but in the polls. I mean, his polls numbers have been sky high. And the only things that I see as a real problem is just recently I read that our Navy had to have a certain amount of destroyers, and it was decreased. And I don't understand why it was decreased. I couldn't get any further information, but I was looking into that. And why would we decrease our military strength in any theater? It's beyond me. So we need to keep up our military strength, especially with this new axis of power that you're talking about. They scare me. They really do. Kim Jong-un. he recently had said that we need to be ready. Whatever that comment was referring to, that's what he said. We need to be ready for war.
Well, he was also going to send us a great big Christmas present, which, of course, was interpreted as either he was going to, you know, fire some long-range missiles, or he was going to test some other things, or maybe a new bomb test. Really, it's kind of the back and forth, right? It's a negotiation. You try and scare the other guys so they move. Isn't that what's going on?
Yeah, and now Russia is coming out with this new type of ultrasonic missile that is supposed to be able to zigzag at incredible speeds to avoid our missile defense system. That's another scary thing.
A zigzag.
Zigzag, that's what I call it. They said
sure.
It can turn at amazing speeds, you know.
That's excellent. Well, for me, as I say, when I look to 2020, I am hopeful for 2020. I wrote an article recently that we're going to talk probably a little bit more about in the next segment. It's called actually, you know, it's about 2020, and the title, when you look at it, I don't know, maybe I changed the title of it, but it's really about seeing the shootings at these last couple of religious places, an attack on our police. Is that really a symptom of a bigger problem? So we'll get into that in a little bit, but you should go to the platform, AmericaOutloud.com, and you can read other columns I have in there, but this one should be up on the platform at some point this week, and then you'll see. I have some interesting thoughts about 2020, but I'm hopeful. I really am, because I think this is a moment in time that is unique. It falls on us here. We have a lot going on here, and how do you determine, you know, what the future is going to be? I've done a lot of programs recently where we talk about predictions for 2020, but how do you know exactly what's going to happen? If we have a great economy pending, this is really awesome, but then the Axis powers here go shut down the Gulf of Oman, that could really throw off the economy completely. So I am hopeful. I think Trump is a smart negotiator. The problem I think I see is that if our Congress and the Never Trumpers don't get together and back the president on these important issues instead of trying to destroy him every minute, that makes him weaker when he's dealing with these other people. So I think that's really my look for 2020. I think it's great. What I'd like to talk about now, and the reason we have Joe on here, is because it's New Year. We don't want to be so heavy. We want to have a little bit of fun. You know, Bill is going to stay for the third segment. Him and I are going to talk about a little more heavier stuff. But right now we got our lawyer of record. Joe is going to be with us, and we're going to talk a little bit about the disorder in the court.
Thanks, Dad. Well, I'd like to start with, I always find these statutes very funny because they, you know, you want to send people to Washington that are going to make Washington work. Well, here's what it looks like when Washington actually gets to work. You know, these senators and congressmen make close to $200,000 a year. Here's what your tax dollars are paying for. All right, are you ready? Chapter 7 of the U.S. Code. It gets very specific. Section 7484, Romanet 1-3-A. Sounds intense. That right there makes it a federal crime for an employee of the U.S. Popcorn Board to leak confidential popcorn information.
Hang on a second. Let me get this straight. Did you say the popcorn, you know, like you put corn in a pot and you know, boom, and you read all tins or whatever he is?
Yes, yes. And I actually looked up. I didn't realize that we had a popcorn board. I know we had an EPA. And, I know we have all these different agencies. I didn't realize we had a federal popcorn board, but we do. They are made of popcorn processors. I looked on their website to raise awareness of popcorn as a whole grain snack. This is what our tax dollars are going to in 2019, the popcorn board.
So in the past, when you brought up these kind of strange laws that are on the books, and I keep joking around saying, you know, the kumquat committee, there probably is some kind of a law that regulates kumquats, wouldn't you think?
And I wonder, if you can't leak confidential popcorn information. Like, what is the confidential information they're disguising? Like, don't mix M&Ms into your popcorn. It sends the calorie count too high. Or like, you got to use liquid butter rather than a spoon tab of butter. What possible confidential popcorn information could they have that would send these guys to the big house? But I'm just glad that it's there. I guess we got to make sure that we keep all confidential popcorn information under wraps.
Well, the only thing I can think of is in the holiday movie Christmas Vacation with our friend Chevy Chase there, when he's going to go down the mountain and he has the little round saucer to go down on, and he rubs a special popcorn thing that keeps the kernels from getting wet in the cereal. Maybe that's confidential information, and maybe that's the kind of thing they're talking about.
You know what? I think you hit the nail on the head. We viewed potentially a violation of Chapter 7, Section 7484 of the U.S. Code, right there in that he leaked the use of their new confidential popcorn butter.
Unbelievable.
I think this all came about as a result of the old-time Jiffy Pop popcorn with the foil on a little aluminum pan always burning. And I think they needed to regulate something to prevent that.
Okay, well, I'll tell you.
If Orville Redenbacher, I'll just say, if Orville Redenbacher wasn't the first president of the Popcorn Board, I don't know what they're doing. This is completely off the rails if he wasn't at least the ceremonial first president.
The Popcorn Board. Well, thank you, Joe, the attorney of record here, always bringing us the sharpest legal information so that if you have a company out there and you're thinking about getting into popcorn-related industries, then maybe you want to bone up on that law so that you don't get yourself in trouble. On that note, we'll be back in a minute with our third segment here on Chasing Justice as we move towards the new year.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. Hey, listen, just so you know, my Chasing Justice friends, I have been honored to be the guest host for Viewpoint this Sunday. You can hear last week's show be on the podcast system right now. I was on there and I really enjoyed myself. It was great. I'm honored that Malcolm asked me to sit in. And I'll also be the guest host this coming week, Viewpoint this Sunday, and I believe the week after that also. So if you get a chance, Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, make sure you jump in and listen to Viewpoint with Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And we're talking about all the topical things that are going on. It's a very fast-paced show, really a lot of fun, a little different than Chasing Justice here, a lot more guests that we bring on there. It's a different kind of show. I think you'll enjoy it. And then it plays again at 6 p.m. on Sunday evening. So if you get a chance, come on and join me. I'd like to have everybody from Chasing Justice listening to Viewpoint. And you should listen to everything on the station. It's really a great station. There's tons of stuff. So what I want to talk about now, and we don't want to be too heavy about all of this, but I have Bill, the Man of Faith Dallas, here with me. And Bill, thank you for staying for another segment. I know we like getting Joe in there when he comes up with all those crazy things in the law. But I think you and I are going to talk about something a little more heady this particular segment. Recently, we have seen a rash of anti-Semitism, especially in the New York City area. And during the holidays, during Hanukkah, a time of joy and celebration, we saw in Muncie, New York, a man burst into the home of a rabbi who was having a celebration for Hanukkah, and he stabbed six people in the rabbi's home, and then the guy took off. Thank God NYPD caught him a short time later. But, you know, that was the eighth or ninth anti-Semitic attack in the New York, specific New York area, in the past couple of weeks. It's really been a terrible thing. Beyond that, we had a shooting at a church down in Texas outside of Fort Worth. People were in there for their Sunday service. They were praying to their God, enjoying their companionship of everyone else being there together. And a man comes in, starts a confrontation with some of the people in the church. And this whole thing is on video. If you have not seen this, you should go to the video and look it up. It's just amazing because most of us are not familiar with the dynamics and how fast these things unfold. It gives us good lessons, too, to see an actual event because you can get some ideas for safety and security things that you could maybe put into place, things you could do better. Now, I want to preface all of my comments here because we're going to talk about that video in a couple of minutes. Anything I say is not meant to put down any of the people that were there, the church officials, anyone who lost their lives. You know, you can't second guess when something happens. They did have foresight to have security in the location, and luckily, the people that they had there for security responded very quickly and saved countless numbers of lives. But from every one of these events, we can learn a lesson. So we have to look at it in that light. What lessons can we possibly learn from this event to help us in all of our religious facilities, whether it's a church, a synagogue, a mosque, anywhere that people get together to worship. So, Bill, with that in mind, I know you're part of a church, and I've been out to your location, and I gave you some tips on some safety and security stuff. You've seen this video. How in relation to your church, what commonalities do you see with your church and that church?
Actually, the only commonality I can even think about was the fact that we have a security team, they have a security team. In New Jersey here, we don't have that ability to carry in a church.
Carry a weapon.
Carry a weapon, yeah. Down there, they do. That's a big difference. But the one thing that we do have in common is that we're alert. We're alert to the fact that this can happen at any time. And it's not always during the church service. It could be when the people just come in and want to pray because our church is open. And somebody can walk in when there's not a lot of people around. But as long as we're alert. Now, you had mentioned a couple of things to our security team and through me. And we put some of those things into play. One of the most important things, I think, is that when the service starts, we lock the doors. And I feel that that's really important. And we have stationed a security person or two at the different entrances. And we've only got the three entrances, and they're locked, and no one is coming in there. But when somebody comes in that they know, they open the doors and let them in, but there's always new people. And we have to be alert to the fact that, yes, we're in a small residential area, we're a small church, and it could be a stranger coming in. We just have to scrutinize them a little bit more carefully. We don't want to offend them, or we don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. We're not going to pat them down or anything, but we just want to be able to look at them with a professional eye view and look at them a little differently. And that's what our guys do. And they're very good at it. They don't scare them away. They welcome them. And sure. At the same time, they're scrutinizing them a little bit differently.
And you have to. You know, when we have places like churches. Churches are open. You know, they have to be open so people can come for their worship time. Like you said, they could come at other times. You know, somebody has a problem in their life. They want to go to church. They want to pray to their God. They have to be able to come and go. But we also have to understand the reality of our modern life is that in many places, and especially at the holidays, the focus of people's attention are on our religious facilities. And if they're having problems in their lives, if they're having difficulties, sometimes that focus, if they're having negative times, that focus can be focused at the religious facility, like it was at the Hanukkah celebration where the rabbi and five of his guests were stabbed, and as well as this church in Texas. People were there to pray, and this guy shows up and does the horrible thing that he did. So when you say you lock the doors and you then scrutinize people coming, that's really the right thing to do. Because once everybody's in there, you've seen who's coming, you know who's there. Now you got eyeballs on them, you can see what's going on. If somebody starts to do something out of place, now your security team can take some kind of action. The problem that a lot of churches have is they don't have anyone. They don't have volunteers, they don't have anybody there at all. And people just come walking in, and that's where some of these problems happen. I know. When I go to church, I look around. I try not to be distracted. I think you and I were having a personal conversation about the fact you can be distracted because you're looking around for danger now. And you're supposed to be there communing with God, not worrying about some crazy person going to hurt everybody. Mm-hmm. But understanding the concept of approaching danger. The only way we can respond in an appropriate amount of time is if we see the danger either coming towards us or as it's starting to develop. So some of the things that we offer, you know, with my company is we do these threat assessments and we go out and we look at, doesn't matter what the facility is, school, business, church, any place people gather, we figure out what is the mission of that location, how open do they have to be, and then we try and guide people through the process. And my thought process is, if I wanted to come in and hurt people in this building, how would I do it? How would I go about it? You identify those security gaps and then you help them tighten them up. So when I talk to you about your church, getting people in there that you've now vetted because you know them, you're keeping an eye on them, and then closing that door. Now a stranger like this guy in Texas approaches. The reality is, as unfortunate as it would be, if he was confronted outside the doors of the church, the only person he potentially could have hurt at that moment was the man or woman who was out there screening him, as opposed to everybody inside that church. Now, in Texas, and there's video, you have to see the video, it's really eye-opening. The man comes in, he's sitting there apparently for a while, and then he gets up and he starts having a confrontation with one of their volunteer security. And that's what I understand from the story. They have people that are volunteer security personnel that are in the church to try and help out. And he starts to have a confrontation with one of them. He's not brandishing a weapon at that moment. He's just yelling. You could see from the video, he's making a commotion. And then very quickly, he pulls a shotgun out of his coat that he was wearing. And he has this shotgun ready to go. Now, at that point, when you watch the video, somewhere in the middle of the video section of the picture, you see a man who is obviously one of their volunteer security personnel. He stands up and very either nonchalantly or as quickly as he could go, you could see he's trying to get his weapon, which is hidden, concealed underneath his shirt. The bad guy saw that and immediately shot this man and killed him and dropped him right away. Behind that victim, though, there was another man who saw the commotion. He was also one of their security personnel, armed. He draws his weapon. And from across the room, 50 feet or so from this room with a handgun, he fired one round, hit the bad guy in the head and dropped him, saved countless lives, no doubt about it. And as the reports come, you see the initial shooting, he shot two people. We're hearing three, two, you know, will be determined, you know, exactly what the number is. But there was lots of people in that church that would have died had that man not been in place and ready to go. So when you say in lots of states, carrying a firearm into a church is not appropriate, well, we have to look at the potential for danger. What is the potential for danger? We can't be paranoid. We have to be aware and prepare. So whether you have volunteers that are armed or unarmed, having somebody with eyes on the situation and an ability to react is important. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we say is, in the threat assessment, what is your potential for danger? We know we get a lot of people in our churches who have problems. They're in crisis. That might be somebody who's yelling and screaming. And we've seen this where they attack the priest and tackle him down. And they have problems that we see start to develop, but they're not armed. They come in and they just cause a commotion. Your staff has to be prepared to deal with people in crisis. They have to be trained to de-escalate someone. That's the new big buzzword that's out there. And I teach that. I teach people to de-escalate people in crisis so that you can avert violence or minimize whatever they're going to do. When you have someone with a weapon, some of the things that I've heard from lots of places, schools and businesses and everywhere, they're opposed to the idea of a gun, even if it's a good guy gun being in their facility. They say, well, you know what? We'll throw books at them. We'll throw water bottles at the shooter. We will throw hymnals at the shooter. And that creates a good distraction for that shooter because reality, we know people, things are coming at you. It's hard to focus on two things at once, but in reality, water bottles, hymnals, books are not going to stop that shotgun. The only thing that's going to stop that shotgun is another type of a weapon that can quickly disable an individual. And people don't like that, but that's the reality that we live with. I talk to people all the time who are completely against guns. And then they see an incident like this, and if there wasn't good guys there with guns, so many more people would have been killed. We saw in Texas last year, a guy went in, killed 26 people, and as he was running out of the church, a local resident showed up with his rifle because he heard the shots, and he took the bad guy out. So who knows what would have happened there if, you know, more people had been armed. Texas recently changed their law to allow people in church to carry concealed weapons. And I think if you watch this video, you'll see not just the two security guards that were killed, or the security guard that was killed and the other man who killed the shooter, but about four or five other people are walking around the church with their weapons out, aiming at the bad guy who was down just in case he popped back up again. The reality is, no matter how you feel about these guns, we're not getting rid of them in our country. That's not going to happen. It's part of our culture, part of our right to defend ourselves. The reality is the only thing that stops a bad guy or a bad girl with a gun is a good guy or a good girl with a gun. And we have to wrap our heads around that one way or another to try and figure these things out. So what do you see this as a symptom of something else? You know, these attacks, when they attack our churches, that's like That's down to the last level. It's bad enough they're attacking our kids in schools. Now they're attacking us in church. Is that a bigger problem for our society?
Well, the bad guys know that this is a very sensitive area. A very sensitive area that strikes at our hearts when we talk about people in church kneeling down and praying, getting shot. Children in the next room, in the children's church, being vulnerable to these sort of attacks. You know, and you talked before about getting distracted in the church service. A year ago, my wife and I were down in Texas to visit my son in Fort Worth, and we went to church with them. And it was a nice service. It was one of these mega churches, but we were in a satellite church, probably had about 500 or 600 people there. And there was the band was playing and everything. There's a lot of noise and commotion, and the service was great. And afterwards, I said to my wife, I said, "How'd you like the service?" She said, "I thought the service was great. It was, you know, very enjoyable, but I was so distracted because I was looking around the room for the nearest exit. Where was the closest door in case something happened?" And wouldn't you know it, sometime towards the end of the service, the pastor had just gotten a message saying that there was a shooting at a sister church not far from where we were.
And that was while you were there in church?
While we were there in church.
In Fort Worth.
Yeah, and we didn't know what it was at the time. And it's scary to think about that. It can happen anywhere at any time. And I had mixed emotions about it. As Joe knows, my grandson was born the other day, and it just so happened to be the same day of the shootings there in Fort Worth. And the hospital he was born in was only 7 miles away. Now, there's another area that is also vulnerable. Think about the hospitals. People that are not ambulatory, they can't move around, you know, all these.
There's a lot of attacks in hospitals. There are huge amounts of assaults in hospitals.
Yeah, but, you know, just the fact that they have a couple of security guys, usually cops, on station there, that can't 100% protect. It just can't.
No, nothing protects us 100%. You know, we need to focus on mental health because a lot of these people have mental health issues, and we don't talk about that. We don't deal with mental health. We shove it under the rug. We don't give it the resources it deserves.
It's one of those ugly diseases that nobody wants to talk about.
You're right. And if we don't deal with it, it's going to come back to bite us because, first of all, those people deserve help. If they need help, they deserve help. But if we can help them before they show up somewhere with a weapon and start shooting at us, this is an extremely good thing for all of society.
Yeah.
So my question, though, about the bigger question about what's going on with this violence, we see the rule of law has been decimated. We see that the power of our government was used against citizens recently, which is totally different. So that's why I want you to go read that article on AmericaOutloud.com. That's really what my 2020 view going forward is. I'm trying to stay very positive. But the whole idea of this really focused it for me, these two attacks over the holidays, seem to me to be exact symptoms, very, very clear, of the degradation of our society by constantly attacking everything that's good about America, knocking it down. We're against our police. We see the attacks on police. We see the attacks on everything that we consider traditional. And now we're seeing entire state governments say, "We are sanctuary. You can break the law and come here." And when you start to do that, when you lower that bar on what's acceptable, what a society will accept as far as violence and things that people do, you're going to get more and more of this. When you have it can go too much the other way. When you have a very, very strict society, you see that everyone's afraid to do anything. We have to find that balance here in our country where we respect the rule of law, where we have to regain trust in our institutions, which, you know, through this whole political thing, and I don't want to bring it back to that, but that is part of the symptom I see. When we see our political parties, and one particular, in this particular instance, use the power and the levers of government to go after individual citizens, to do what they want, to thwart the will of the people, because why should they listen to us? They're the ones who should make the decisions. all of this starts to shake and starts to come apart. And that does not help us in the world. It doesn't help us at home. It doesn't help us when we're sitting in church and somebody thinks they can just waltz on in there and hurt us. They can hurt our kids in our schools or in our businesses.
You know, how many times have you heard me say, our country, we have lost our moral compass. My wish for 2020 is that we would find some way of resetting that moral compass and get us back on track to love God, love our country, love our family, you know, and we don't hear that as much. But you know what? There's a segment of society that is lost, and we need to be able to minister to those people that are lost. You know, we can pick up on some of the people that are hurting if we're just aware of that. If we just have a little bit of compassion for certain people. The two kids that were with the long black jackets and
Columbine.
Mm-hmm. You know, they were putting out all sorts of things that
messages
we
can see them
able sure. to pick up on.
And Bill, that is part of what's in this column, is that what I'm saying, the symptoms that I'm seeing, the signs are there for us to recognize that it's fallen to us now, is my point. It has fallen to the good and decent people to make a stand. I didn't think that would really come in our time, but it is here. The day has arrived that if we don't stand up and change this, if we don't stand up and take action, it's not going to change. And for 2020, I'm hoping that we can do that. So I'm going to follow you, and I'm going to say a prayer for our nation, for our families, for our friends. Let's love everybody. Let's try and do the right thing in 2020. And remember, be aware and prepare, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be safe. We'll talk to you soon here on Chasing Justice.